This is our first podcast. My name is Terrilyn Lawson, here with
Sister Claire Joseph Meyer.
And this is That's What She Said. I am the campus minister here at the Koinonia Center, which is located in Eugene, Oregon, near the University of Oregon.
And I am also a campus minister for University of Oregon for Good Soil Campus Ministry.
Awesome. So the title, That's What She Said, I think it's hilarious. Coming up with that, it just makes me giggle and grin every time. Mm-hmm. But it really defines what we want to do with this show, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's partly the cheekiness of the comment, right, which indicates that we're telling a joke, but we're not, because we want to acknowledge the playful humor in which that is usually used. But also to acknowledge that women talk about quite a few different things, not just blowjobs. So on this show, we want to acknowledge some she/her thoughts on philosophy, theology, the important things of life, the things that students are concerned about and asking us about, and bring those into dialogue with one another.
Yeah, you mentioned an interesting point. Yeah, we do identify as she. Those are our pronouns, she, her. So even on that level, we're addressing that. And just in case you were wondering, so what is our why? I guess that was our why, right?
That was our why. Our why is that we talk to students a lot. And in our relationship with each other, found ourselves debriefing some of these important things with each other and realizing these conversations are fun, they're important, we would love to share them directly with students. What would be a way we could do that?
Right, that leads us to this podcast, that it's a real direct way to do this, to address it apart from, there's social media. Yeah, you can do Instagram Live, but those formats seem to be limited, like not so much time, but patience, interest.
Yeah. When I'm on social media, I'm definitely always multitasking. And I think the content we want to cover in our podcast is the kind of thing that we'd love you to put in some headphones and go for a jog, or have it be something that you listen to when you're winding down for bed, but you're done with screens. And so we feel like this format is both more targeted and accessible at the same time.
I think that's great. You know, when you're done with the screens, like you just, because there's so many times when I just want an audiobook.
Yeah. So done with it all the time.
Like, I don't want my eyes to move. I just want someone to read me a bedtime story, right? So this can be your bedtime story.
Let us lull you to sleep.
Let our voices let you go there. So yeah, you're getting the gist of why the title that we've chosen is very appropriate. Mm. And so why us? I think we keep saying like the same things. Like we think each other is funny. At least I think you're funny. I don't know if you're just
funny.
Think me
it's
kind
mutual.
Of like, you know, I can hang. She's all right. She's okay. I mean, I could do better, but for now, this is fine.
If I have to suffer fool, move on.
If I must. Yeah. I mean, we didn't really discuss this before, but when we first met, I was new. Mm-hmm. We met at a meeting and you were like, hey, I like it when, you know, people...
talk to people.
Like people engage one another, right?
You know?
Especially when you're new.
Yeah.
And don't know anyone. How awkward is it when you're just like
I know. And you have to be the person to go up to other people and be like, hi, I'm new, and that's your whole story, right? Instead of somebody coming to you and being like, welcome to this place. I would love to make a connection with you. Let's get coffee. And then we can hear each other's stories and become friends.
Yeah, right? That's the warm way.
It's one way to do it.
But it's funny you should say that, because I wouldn't be that person. I wouldn't be the one that's like, hey, you're new. I noticed. Let's get some coffee. I'm definitely like, she's new. We'll talk later.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I think this comes from me from definitely being that kid at summer camp who everyone thought was a total snob because I was so shy. Right. And so I would be the outsider because everyone's like, oh my gosh, Claire thinks she's so great. She's too good for us. Where secretly I'm like, I can't talk to people. And so now that I'm on the grown up side of the equation, I'm like, all right, I got to fix this. This is a sad world for introverts. I tell you what.
Right. Right. I used to get that. I probably still do, where it's like aloof or shy. Yeah. Like I've been described as shy. Yeah. And it's not so much that, it's more. I need to adjust. Like, this is a new environment. I need to see how people interact, and I need to know what the rules are.
Yes.
The rules are for engagement before I just go in there and make a complete fool of myself.
As fun as that is.
As fun as it can be. As an adult, the older I get, the less I care. Mm-hmm. That's one of the joys of getting older. You kind of revert to childhood ways of being. When we usually, right? When you're a child, you just go for it head first. And your parents are like, no, don't jump into the deep end. And you're like,
but you'll save me.
Right? There's that safety net. And so, yeah, as an adult, I feel I'm getting to that point again where I'm willing to take certain chances. Mm-hmm. So that's the why listen. Why listen? Because we do have something to say based upon our listening to students, mm-hmm. and our wanting to connect with students. Students, particularly at the University of Oregon, but you don't have to be a student. Yeah. You don't have to be from the University of Oregon. You don't have to even be in Oregon. Like, we want people to feel that the questions they have, theological, sociological, psychological, like all these questions, we take them seriously. Yeah. And we may laugh at them eventually, but initially, our goal is to answer these questions, because some of these questions we have as well, and right. we've discussed them. And we know if we're talking about it, like, who else has these questions, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, today's topic is worth.
Oh yes.
Yes, worthy. We got to it.
We got to it.
Today's topic. How about you start us off? Because it comes from conversations that you've had with your students.
Yeah, so this question came up in the context of a Bible study, and it was from a student who was brave enough to articulate a concern about what does it mean to be worthy. We throw around this language a lot about something being worthy of our time or not worthy of our time, but this becomes an adjective we apply to people all the time. Am I worthy? Is this person worthy of me? What does it mean to be worthy or unworthy? And it really, in the moment, what I realized receiving that question is that in my history as a mental health counselor, I've become really leery about the word worthy, because it, for me, connects to basically assigning relative values to people. The conversation about worthiness and unworthiness assumes something fundamental about people that functions on a sliding scale, that there are people who can be more or less worthy than other people. And when you approach that question, either from a concern of mental health wellness or holistic wellness within an individual, or from a Christian context, there should be massive alarm bells going off when we talk about that sliding scale of worth, right?
Yeah. It's a question that comes up because not just in our culture, but as we discussed, it's even in the literature when we read theology, or more specifically, when you read the New Testament, you have this notion of being found worthy, if not explicitly, then implicitly.
Right.
That God values us, that we have worth. Mm-hmm. And it monetizes our existence. And we can blame Paul. We can say it's Paul's fault. But it's more that Paul is making these analogies. He's making these metaphors because of the audience. Mm-hmm. It was the Roman occupation. Slaves were everywhere. There was definitely a stratification of the haves and have-nots. And Paul is seeking to connect. What is the gospel message? What is the good news in a way that people can grasp? And unfortunately, the analogy, the metaphor, overpowered the message, the gospel message itself. That God loves us so much that God is willing to give everything, that we are God's children. And what that means, to be loved in that way, that a person does not withhold, or a deity does not withhold love and does not withhold resources. And that gets dismissed, or that gets overshadowed by, oh, worth. Okay, that I understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. It's that when you think about the initial, it's that intention versus impact. For me, there's a question of the intention is to communicate to people who are experiencing oppression or occupation or any other sort of violence, as they would have been at the time Paul was preaching and writing, to try to say, you have been purchased from your slavery to sin, right? Leaning into that slave model. You have been purchased from your slavery to sin by God, and you are now God's slaves, which is like a big step up, right? That's a much better situation to be in. And so there's the connection that's so important for Paul between that purchase away from being enslaved to sin, meaning that you are now to extend the love and service of your new master, who is God, by whom we are also the natural and adopted children, right? And I think about that intent making sense, as you say, in the context in which the message was delivered. But where that gets so distorted, particularly in the dominant American church today, is we lose the latter half of that. We have that purchase from sin to be free, mm-hmm. which is not a problematic idea on the face. No. But we lose the emphasis that the purpose to which it draws us is love and service to one another. So we replace it, I think, in a way that makes a lot of sense from our dominant culture with this need to be worthy mm-hmm. and to be free. And so I hear when students are asking this question about worthiness, it's not always within a religious context. It's a very secular idea, too, that's fed by our capitalistic.
Definitely.
Right. Yeah. We really want you to be pursuing with a lot of avidness that idea of worthiness, success, respectability stuff. Right. There's all of this out there in ways that are really disorienting and damaging for students. And we were talking earlier, Tara-Lynn, about Brené Brown's approach to
yeah,
this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because she's on fire. Everyone's listening to Brené Brown.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She's great.
It's her time.
She's great. And she is embracing, because it's the paradigm we live in, embracing the paradigm of this idea of worthiness and unworthiness, and says worthiness does not have prerequisites. You know, if we could get people to embrace this idea that you can just be worthy and you don't have to earn it. There's nothing you have to do yeah. to be worthy. The fact that you are here means you're worthy. And it's a beautiful idea. In the paradigm of worthiness and unworthiness. And I where I've tried to push students, maybe unfairly and maybe too quickly,
yeah.
right, is to reject the paradigm. Because at the end of the day, even though there's scriptural language that embraces the paradigm, the gospel of Jesus Christ is, please don't worry about your status, mm-hmm. whether it's worthy or unworthy, saved or unsaved. I mean, the status of your being is not the point. That's very self-involved. It makes your world very small, and it makes you put yourself at the center of it. Mm-hmm. And our desire is to put at the center people who have been pushed out of the center. So it becomes this limnus gate, that infinity symbol, right,
yeah.
of movement, where we're experiencing a greater orientation or arc toward justice and equity, which will never happen if we're always centering ourselves.
Right. And there's this pressure to prove it.
Yeah.
I think that we were talking about earlier, that we were discussing. It's always on our minds, I guess, mm-hmm. that in our culture you drive, like this constant drive, this constant pressure to keep moving, to grind, and even if it's not the culture in large, it may be from the home yeah. where your parents don't necessarily say, all right, I've invested in you. Make our time worth it.
That's right.
You know, we could have done other things with that money, but we decided to give you braces. You know, just like the little things. Like you get an itemized list of mm-hmm. how your parents have nurtured you.
Yeah.
And on one sense, it's your parents understand, yeah, we did it because we love you. Now prove that our love was not displaced.
Let's see the results.
Or... Yeah, you know, it's like we put in so that in retirement we can collect, you know, whatever that is in your family dynamic. And it's difficult to go against that. So even mm-hmm. apart from, let's say you're not New Testament, let's say you're not religious or spirit, you're not any of those aspects of like the Bible, mm-hmm. of practicing the Bible, but just culturally or familiarly, you have this kind of wanting to be worthy, yeah. and hearing that is inherent, but still having to prove it. It's really difficult. And also saying that it's linked to gratitude, right? Because mm-hmm. even gratitude is, it's where I'm grateful and I show that I'm grateful, but am I seeking to pay back? Am I seeking to earn the the gift that you gave. And it's a gift. Mm-hmm. Gifts aren't earned. Like you said, that paradigm, like if not this paradigm of being worthy or seeking to prove worth, then what takes its place?
Well, and part of what, especially as you mentioned parents, right, that part of what's so challenging about all of this is it's rarely that much on the face, right? Like a parent won't say, here's the tally of how much money I've put into you. It's sort of this kind of insidious, implicit, or perceived. I mean, I guess some families might have that.
It's it might on the be refrigerator, right. Kit.
Here we go. Ballet lessons.
Hand paintings. That's and, right. Yeah.
But I think about, like, because so much of this operates on our subconscious or unconscious level, and so it's hard to call it up and name it for what it is. And so as you talk about the difficulty of have we offered a different paradigm, comes also with have we clearly called out this paradigm for what it is? Because until we call it out for what it is, we can't offer an alternative in a way that people are going to consciously receive. And I think that's part of my ongoing wrestling with American Christianity, dominant American Christianity, is we've gotten really mixed up that the gospel of Jesus Christ is in there with a lot of other stuff, a lot of sort of corrupting influences that have worked their way into the institution over the past 2,000 years.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. And so I think there's even within the Christian tradition as we receive it, if you are Christian, there's a lot of conflicting messages around that.
Oh, definitely.
Right?
Definitely.
It's a horror show.
And seeking to extricate all that is difficult because it's how much of this is what I was raised with and how much of this is what I believe, but then finding that is not necessarily true. And then what does that say? So you have this existential crisis in the middle of seeking to right some of these doctrinal wrongs.
Yeah. Though I will say, as part of making this visible, I think that for all of the conversations that are happening right now around racism and white folks who are starting to do some of that work, running into the conflict around your effort to justify yourself as a quote unquote good white person versus having to let that go and say, if you're white, the deal is you're complicit in white supremacy. That's a part of your reality. So you're going to need to relinquish maybe some of your previous ideas that you were a quote unquote good white person or on that sliding scale of like better white person and just focus on doing the work that is called, you know, like that you are called to do for BIPOC liberation, right? That like your status is no longer like the point. Stop centering yourself, right? Like stop working in the model of white exceptionalism and just do the work that you were called to do by, in this case, at this point in history, right? Black leaders. And I think that that's one of those lenses where it's like, if you can start making the connections between work that you're doing in sociological contexts and contexts of human relationships, and particularly relationships between human groupings, right? And say, this is in real life in so many different ways. And if you can start unpacking your work, in this case as a white person, of like having to shift your mindset away from justifying yourself so that you can be good or exceptional or whatever as a white person to you need to focus on the work. I feel like it's a similar dynamic when you're doing the theological shift between being a quote unquote good Christian, like something being a Christian makes me good somehow, to being a Christian isn't about a status of identity. Being Christian is about my orientation of how I live my life. This is a commitment that I am making in Paul's example in my new slavery situation, right? Of my service to God, my commitment to discipleship to Jesus, that it wasn't like the end goal was my liberation from sin. That was a means to an end, right? That liberation was a means to an end of loving and serving my neighbor. So my focus on worthiness, my own worthiness or my unworthiness, again, I don't know if that's a fully escapable paradigm, but is one that we can make a choice to examine and reject sort of out of hand when we're ready to do that.
Yeah. It's as a situation presents itself, right? Yes. That you evaluate it as you become more and more aware that that's how you think.
Yeah.
Like that is a part of maybe some of decision making. And that makes me think about also when God is, or Jesus more specifically, is approached and the person says, you know, good teacher. And Jesus says, why do you call me good?
Right. Yeah.
And of all people where you would think that wouldn't that wouldn't matter. Like, of all people, it would just be like, yeah, well, obviously. But even Jesus is, but even Jesus is questioning his rubric or his classification, his categories for what makes a person good. And we'd never get him saying, well, you're good because you heal people, because you feed people, because you're teaching people, because you don't waste resources. He never gives a list of why he calls Jesus is good. He calls Jesus good as a way of flattery, in a sense. Yeah. He's like, you're a leader, you're a faith leader, you're a good person. And Jesus questions that.
Yeah.
He's like, based upon what am I good?
Yeah.
And so I've thought, when looking at that text, if Jesus is saying, like, why are you calling me good? Then what leg do I stand on when I say I'm a good person?
But it feels so important, right? I mean, I am one of those people, if you're like the Enneagram types, right?
Oh.
It's also very popular. I'm just quoting popular things right now.
Yeah, it's okay.
That I think about, like, this, the type one, which is this kind of obsession about being good, right? And about being right, not in a literal accuracy sense, but just as a your moral uprightness,
yes,
right? That's
yes.
like your end game for everything. That this is... this is an even harder shift, but you're right. If we, this idea of the sinlessness of Jesus, or the perfection of Jesus, or the goodness of Jesus, it's really quite refreshing in that context to have Jesus himself be like, that's not the, why are you focusing on that? Why are you calling me that? Right? Like, I'm not concerned about my status or labels or adjectives, right? Like, I am here because I have work to do.
Mm.
I am here in this ministry, and this is what this is all about. And that's, I mean, that's the biggest dream for me, for the Christian church, is that we become much more overtly and dominantly about that ministry that Jesus showed us in his life. Obviously, there's incredible importance in his death and resurrection for our theological tradition, but sometimes at the cost of overshadowing his ministry when he was alive.
Yeah.
Right?
And we do it. I know I do it. But then I have to practice saying, according to Paul.
Yeah.
And knowing that, you know, Paul's not Jesus. Paul wasn't even, like, there during Jesus' lifetime. So we get this very educated person, because Paul, being a Pharisee, like, he was educated in the law and how to be right,
yeah,
and how to be good in that way of thinking. And then converting, I won't say converting, but then accepting Jesus, mm-hmm, as the Messiah. And he's still reconciling. How do I work through my faith, mm-hmm, given all that I've done and all that I've believed, and having my paradigm shift?
That's right.
And then how do I then instruct others who don't even have the same foundation as I have, get to this point where I am finding myself, and then beyond?
Right.
And I think we find ourselves there now. At least we come from a different point than Paul, where we kind of start with with following Jesus, a lot of us,
yeah,
but at least being in a ministry, right?
Yeah.
But for those who don't, for those who are like Paul, or maybe haven't had any religious upbringing or introduction or experience, it's, wow, you're changing my world. Like, I don't think this way.
Yeah.
And so I think a good entryway has been to talk about worthy.
Yeah.
Because that's something that culturally people can say, oh, I know about that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I definitely deal with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then going back, I think, again, that's what Paul was doing when he's talking about money and being a slave.
That's right.
Because people can say, oh, we know about that.
We know.
That's our world. Like, yeah, that we understand. This otherness that you're seeking to introduce us to, not so
that's
much.
Right.
But when you talk about slave and being in debt and having a master and then owing and just this financial bind that a person can be wrapped in this culture, in this Roman colonizing culture, yeah we got that. And right. So using that language then as an entryway,
right?
So
yeah, and I know that kind of when I said earlier, I feel like I unfairly or too quickly push students to like reject the paradigm, right? It's because I think for people particularly who have received message upon message, both from their family systems and larger social systems, that they are unworthy, it's not fair to ask them to leap to rejection of the paradigm, mm-hmm. right? Because it's like there's so much pain and shame and damage done by all of those years of messaging that we need to address first, mm-hmm. right? There's a degree to which you kind of have to heal within the paradigm before you can let it go, right? And so to find that both Jesus and Paul, though he is not Jesus, right?
Yeah.
But like
no.
A, not Jesus, but a powerhouse of Christian theology.
Yes, definitely.
Massively influential. Both of them do emphasize these messages that bondage to sin, which is not just the ways in which we, like, quote unquote, act badly, right? Or like think bad thoughts or whatever. But I think too, the way that we are in bondage to the negative impacts of sin as well, of other people's
yeah.
sin, to be freed from that is huge.
It is.
Right?
It is. And it's a constant work too. So what's the takeaway then? What do we leave?
If we were to sum up in one or two sentences.
If we had to.
For me, thinking back on this original conversation, mm-hmm. right, in the Bible study, if I had my wits about me just so.
I think I found them on the floor.
I think I found them just here.
There you go.
Probably what I would have said is asking the question about worthiness is really important, mm-hmm. because these are things we tend to hide within ourselves because they're vulnerable and they're scary,
yeah.
and we're afraid of the answers. Mm-hmm. And my ultimate hope would be that, number one, we can undo the deceit, the ongoing pervasive deceit around the idea of unworthiness, mm-hmm. or needing to become worthy. But I don't want to lean too far or too heavily
yeah.
into the goal of being or becoming worthy,
mm-hmm.
Because I hope that freedom from the bondage to this fear of unworthiness can springboard us instead of into worthiness, over worthiness and into love and service,
yeah.
right? Where we're other oriented, but we can't become that way when the abuses against an individual, right, mm-hmm. are so catastrophic.
Yeah,
that becoming other oriented is just self-debasing.
Yeah, it definitely requires that we have compassion and patience,
yeah.
and that we do listen to what the person is seeking to convey, right? If the idea is, am I worthy? If that's the question they're asking, like, how do you become worthy? Am mm-hmm. I already worthy?
Yeah.
Then it's like, do I matter? It may seem too easy to say. It's like, yes, but how do we then show, like, part of that work, like doing the work, how do we show a person that without seeking to dismantle so much of them so quickly?
Right.
Yeah. So, all right. I think we've covered it. If anyone listening to this has any questions, definitely reach out to us. And so you can definitely visit my website, and it'll also be on your website, right,
yeah,
Claire?
Yeah.
I mean, not my personal website, but the Koinonia Center's website. I don't have a website. And it's Koinonia Center, Koinonia, center.org.
Yeah, and our website is begoodsoil.org.
That's easier than what I have to do.
Winner.
True. Also, we are looking for local artists. Local artists or new artists wanting to get your music out there. So if you are part of a group or a band or a solo and you're thinking, how can I get my music out there? Hit us up. We definitely would like to listen to what you have. It doesn't have to be like Christian gospel or anything per se, but it has to be good. I mean, if not, given our whole talk, it has to be worthy.
It has to be worthy.
We have to like it. Let's put it that way. I don't know what the criteria will be, but if you're just interested in putting your music out there, we're pretty much interested in putting it up, as long as it's appropriate. You know, we don't want anything that's, I think we need to say, like, hate-filled or, you know, propaganda or
wouldn't fly.
You know, yeah. that's not it. That won't work.
That won't work.
That's not it. Not it. So yes, we do want to highlight some of that talent that's out there. But this time around, we have Jamel Jones and Freed. The song is titled "I Speak Life." All right. So thank you again for joining us, and we hope that we were worth your time.
Full circle. That's all it needs to be. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Come on and just